A special guest joins us now, someone who never deflates his blogs. I said blogs, is Rock Rubacco. Rock, how are you?
You really had me worried about that one for a second.
It's just too easy. Can we call this offseason for the Orioles the offseason of repeating storylines? Because that's the way it's been, whether it's the Orioles losing or retaining, not retaining players that they have, or getting another bat in the outfield or two, and then this Dan Duquette thing, which has not stopped. It's just dribbled out or bled out ever since the winter meetings and that flight literally on the way there for you and others. It's never stopped.
It hasn't. I don't know whether this is Duquette Gate. Have we come up with a name for
it? We can make it Duquette Gate. I think that makes sense.
Why not? Even though it really makes no sense, because Watergate was not a controversy about water. It was actually a hotel named Watergate.
So you know, I talked about this on my show last night. If you were to tell Richard Nixon or anyone who lived through Watergate that the lasting legacy of that event in American political history would be throwing the word gate on the end of any controversy, I think Richard Nixon would be very happy right now.
I think so. I'd be very proud of that.
Yes.
But you're right about this offseason, though. It seems like it's these same storylines. And unfortunately, really, the Duquette story is the one that hangs heaviest in the air. And sometimes you want a distraction when a team isn't doing a lot in the offseason, but this is a very bad one. And what I find really unfortunate is that, you know, it took a little while to repair this team's reputation, this organization's reputation in baseball, the arrival of Buck Showalter, eliminating that losing culture, everything Dan's done, three straight winning seasons, playoffs two of the last 3 years, coming off 96 wins, division title. And now you've got this going on where, you know, they're getting bashed nationally again. And it's like, you know, you work so hard to kind of move up to that next level and leave all that behind you. And now here we are again, kind of getting dragged down in the mud. I think that's very unfortunate.
It is. You know, it's not fair. And I saw Ken Rosenthal write about this yesterday. And it's been written about a lot this offseason from national guys about motivation for Dan Duquette and where he really wants to be. And even if it wasn't maybe something that was on your conscience every moment, does it kind of seep in to where it's affecting your day-to-day work? And when you really are dreaming about another job, how does that not impact you? And people are going to wonder.
Right, exactly. I mean, just the perception. And, you know, like, I'm talking about how distracting this has been. He's got to be distracted as well, you would think, to some degree. At the same time, he's not sabotaging the organization, and he's certainly not failing to re-sign key players or bring in Erasmus or an Aoki because of the Toronto situation. There are different circumstances why all those things didn't happen. But nonetheless, just the perception is bad enough. And, you know, you just don't need that when you're trying to get everybody on the same page and take that next step from ALCS to World Series. And that's why this has to be resolved. I've written, you wonder if you're at the point of no return, even if tomorrow the Blue Jays said, hey, we've just hired somebody else, and Dan Duquette finally speaks publicly and says, I'm more than happy here and I'm not looking for another job. You're still going to have people wondering, okay, does he really mean that now? And you have an employee who would rather be someplace else. Dan's not miserable in Baltimore by any stretch. He signed the extension through 2018. But when a better offer comes up, of course you're going to be interested. You're going to be intrigued. And it's no secret within the organization that he would really like this promotion. Now, on the same time, I mean, the Orioles are getting bashed, like I said, for this situation. Yet really, on the surface, what have they done wrong? They have an employee with four more years on his contract. So, you know, the Blue Jays could be, you know, accused of tampering by reaching out to him before they went to the Orioles, which you're assuming is happening. Now the Orioles are talking about compensation. They're not just going to let him walk to a division rival and get nothing in return or very little in return, like the Theo Epstein situation with the Cubs. We have a guy with four more years under contract who you would rather keep in the organization, certainly when the offseason started. So in that regard, I don't know how the Orioles are the bad guys here.
And plus, it's an interdivision rival, which I do think changes the equation quite a bit. And it's not apples to apples with the Cubs-Red Sox deal for Epstein years ago. It's just not. It's different when you're talking about an interdivision swap here. Going to what happened today, and Buster Olney, he tweeted out the name Jeff Hoffman. And Hoffman was the first-round pick, ninth overall by the Jays last year, as a possible piece of compensation. That was written about earlier in the week by the Toronto National Post as well. Also written in the same publication was maybe the Blue Jays taking Ubaldo Jimenez. Just throwing things out there. Do you think Hoffman would be a name that would suffice the Orioles here in sending Duquette? It would take someone like that. That is a major prospect piece.
So wait, so the Orioles don't want Duquette going to division rival, but they'd be okay with Ubaldo Jimenez? Wait, I'm confused.
It's very confusing.
It is very confusing. Yeah, the thing with Hoffman, though, is he would have to be a player to be named later, wouldn't he? I mean, it's a little confusing because you can't, under MLB rules, you can't trade a guy until he hit a year has passed since his draft date. And since that hasn't happened,
interesting.
As far as I know, yeah, Hoffman, now he could still be in the deal. He'd be the player to be named later, and after a year has passed, like I guess that would be this coming June, whatever, then you could say he's the player to be named later. And if that does happen, if the Orioles do make the trade for a player to be named later, we will know who it was. But yeah, he would have to be, not, and that would be unprecedented, I believe, to have somebody like that big a prospect go in a deal like this, as opposed to where the Red Sox got reliever Chris Carpenter from the Cubs, who I don't even know, he might have pitched a few games for him and disappeared. I mean, they, you know, you just take what you can get. The Orioles shouldn't have to take what they can get when, like you said, division rival, he has 4 years left on his contract. The Blue Jays apparently reached out to him when they maybe should have gone to the Orioles first. So, yeah, why wouldn't you hold out and see, well, let's see what we can get? And, you know, I've heard rumblings that, you know, the Orioles could be saying, look, we're going to hold out for more compensation in return for not filing tampering charges.
Mm.
And the Blue Jays may be looking at that and saying, okay, if we want to avoid that mess, then, yes, we're going to have to go ahead and part with somebody else, somebody, you know, an actual prospect. Otherwise, why would you even want to do that? And I know there are Blue Jay fans, no offense to Dan Duquette, that must be saying, wait a minute, I know the guy's done a nice job there, but we're giving up our ninth overall pick in the draft, the ninth overall pick last year for an executive when there are probably other guys you could get, unless they really like him that much. It's really interesting for a guy who was out of baseball for 10 years before the Orioles brought him back to the majors.
And let's not forget, although it's a different job, he'd be a CEO and the president of the entire organization, which means so much more beyond the day-to-day grind of being a baseball general manager. You're not scouring the waiver wire every day. You just cannot do that. And the Blue Jays already have a general manager in place who's made a lot of bold moves this past offseason. I'm not saying they're good moves, but trading Brett Laurie for Josh Donaldson, signing Russell Martin to an $80 million deal, that seems to me like a guy who has power inside that organization.
Right, and that's why on the surface I wonder, you know, just how happy would Dan Duquette be in a job like this where he does like to roll up the sleeves and get involved in the Rule 5 draft and sign guys the minor league deals with the invites and make the death moves and try and wheel and deal, as opposed to being, I don't know, I don't want to minimize the job and say a pencil pusher, but, you know, a guy who's going to have to deal with a lot of kind of administrative stuff that I would think would not interest him as much. But, again, that title is probably as high as you can go unless you actually own a team. And I'm sure there must be a bump in pay. So I think he's just the idea of being a president CEO. He, you know, was with the Expos previously, so, you know, he's out of affection for Canada. I think all those things appeal to him. But once you're actually sitting there behind that desk, I know structures have changed in baseball now. You look at a lot of organizations, you're like, okay, who's really making the calls here? Where guys are GMs and they get bumped up to another title, but are they still involved in the wheeling and dealing? I wonder how much Dan would want to be hands-on.
Yeah,
if he took that promotion, because he does really enjoy that aspect of the job, as we know, because what is he known for here right now, before this controversy?
It's scrappy signings.
Right, the depth moves, and you know, exactly, and I know people call it dumpster diving, but some of these moves he's made has really helped the team, and they do have much better depth now, and the international market, and try to sign guys like that. So those are the things that he would not be occupying his time as much if he's president and CEO, unless there's some other arrangement made, and if I'm working below him and I'm supposed to be doing that, I wouldn't be comfortable with that situation.
Last question, Rock. I mean, I would think there has to be a resolution in the next 8 or 9 days before FanFest, or just tell me when the first interaction with fans and Dan Duquette will be next Saturday, because I will be there several hours before, because that might be the most interesting FanFest of all time.
Well, if it's like, and I haven't announced all the forums, if it's like past years, you know, Ian Buck do one, the very first one, I believe, for season ticket holders. Aren't they allowed in like at 10?
Something like that.
Know, they have their own forum, and then those two, I believe, take the stage later for everybody else. And you're right. I mean, if it's not resolved by then, you know, Dan's been ducking our questions, and I assume he's going to try and do the same thing at the Boston, the BBWAA Boston chapter dinner tonight when he's there with Buck, and in New York Saturday. At some point, you're going to have to address it, and FanFest would be it. I would, you know, now I'm thinking maybe it will be resolved before then. I, you know, I'm not going to place odds, but I think there's a better chance now that this gets done than what there was a couple of days ago after Buck did meet with Peter Angelos for an extended period yesterday, and that was one of the big topics. And then the fact that there are specific names being discussed as compensation. I'm told nothing imminent, but I think there's a better chance it gets done now.
Very, very bizarre and intriguing all at the same time. Rock Kubacko of MassinSports.com. Rock, thank you so much as always.
Thank you.